Okay, our next presenter is Erin Owens, and she's an epidemiological senior research associate at the Health Policy Research of Northwest.
And if you thought Susan spoke fast,
try to go slowly.
I'll cover some business. Okay. I have a financial conflict of interest in some of the work around the medical access program. Our company, Health Policy Research Northwest, actually designed and manages a custom database that I'll talk about just briefly that helps track the uninsured that are enrolled in the system of care. Our time spent actually involved in the implementation of this program was pro bono. So there I am, my conflict. We are an independent, not-for-profit research organization that provides all sorts of program evaluation and technical assistance. We focus mostly on reducing disparities and work primarily with other nonprofit organizations, helping to assist their evaluation needs. This work, and what Susan didn't mention, is that when we started this work in Lane County, our two hospital systems, both of which CEOs sit on the board of 100% Access, were suing each other for multi-millions of dollars. So if we can do it under those harsh circumstances, then we think anybody can do it. In August of last year, the executive committee passed down a community-wide proclamation that said, we want a medical access program and we want it by October. And this was August. And these people, all listed here, which is a very multidisciplinary and representative group of our community, got together and said, okay, we're up to the challenge. And we even have a surgeon on here that gave up operating room time to be here, which I don't think is typical and probably wouldn't happen in many communities. However, it's been a spectacular experience, and I just want to point out all the breadth of people. I think we know why we need a program like MAP for the most part. So we have people using the emergency room, and they're not getting timely, and they're not getting efficient care, and they're using it sometimes for primary care purposes, and that happens across all different types of insurance types. So when we talk about redesigning a care for the uninsured, we're hoping that this model is also scalable to other types of insurance products and commercial Medicare coverage over time. We think that we have found a way that can help systematize and optimize care that's delivered to the uninsured over time, and most importantly, make linkages for people across health and human services, because every time a patient comes into a medical office and they're uninsured, the administrative burden for that office is multiplied exponentially, because as we know, the problems for those clients are not just that they have diabetes, it's that they have depression and they're homeless and they have a drug addiction. And how hard is it to manage the diabetes if you can't manage the other three? And so this pilot program is a community-based effort to expand access to health care. It is based on the concept of, it takes, to me, kind of a multidisciplinary and holistic approach to health one step further, because we're saying we want one person, one contact person for an uninsured individual that helps them get dental health care, mental health, social service needs across every sector in our community. And for this pilot, everything was pro bono, although it's not intended to be long term. That was just the initial. We wanted to be able to quantify how much the program would cost and how much our community would need to invest over time to make a program like this fly long term. We're looking at other models like three share models, employer, individual, community sponsored programs. So this is just the beginning of what is a long program to come. This is a virtual model, so the medical home is not just the medical home under the traditional constructs that you might read in a lot of articles where you have a one primary care office that's managing all the needs of the client. This is a partnership between the primary care provider and a coordinator that's assigned to that patient. The coordinator that's assigned to that patient is supported by the coalition partners. So right now, there's one insurance company that's paying the salary of a coordinator, and that responsibility will go to another partner as time goes on, and so on and so on and so on. So everybody is sharing the burden equitably. There's also a decentralized enrollment site. So the people are enrolled in places where they are safe. So if you're a Head Start client, you can be enrolled by your Head Start nurse into MAP. because that is a situation in which you are safe sharing your financial information, in which you already have a relationship and you have a person there that's going to help manage other parts of your life and your children's life, because we're talking about families. We're not talking about individuals. We're talking about mom has insurance because she works. Dad is unemployed. He doesn't have anything. And both of the kids are on Medicaid. So this is a family approach, not just an individual approach. Who is eligible for MAP? You have to be a resident of Lane County. You have to be uninsured. You can't qualify for Oregon Health Plan, our Medicaid product. We do the screening for that in order to be enrolled in this program. You have to be poor enough. You have to not be currently connected to a system of care. So we're not pulling patients out of safety net clinics if they already have a home there and are being cared and managed. Our safety net clinics are very sophisticated. They're already doing really intense, you know, care coordination and managing. We're not trying to displace people out of that system. We have 60,000 uninsured, 18,000 are in safety net clinics. We're looking to fill the gap for the rest of the people that aren't already connected to care. People must sign HIPAA consent, charitable immunity, which is very interesting. We don't have time to go into that, but they are asked to sign a waiver that they're not going to sue their physician if, except in the instances of gross negligence. And there's actually a law in the state of Oregon that allows us to do that. There are two types of programs. There's a full card or a temporary card. The difference between these is if we know you're not eligible for Medicaid, you are probably screened directly into a full card. If we know that you are possibly eligible for Medicaid or another product that already exists, we will temporarily enroll you into MAP so you can have continuity of coverage, you can get your health needs met. If you become eligible for another program, you're going to roll over onto that program at that time. And we're going to track you, because chances are if you were uninsured once, there's a high probability that you may be uninsured again in the next 2 years. And we don't want to lose that person, and we don't want them to be set up under our program with a medical home and under our virtual model and then lose some type of coverage, and then now they're, you know, have no home again and they have no one managing their chronic conditions. We have what we call services included but not guaranteed. When patients sign up for this program, there are no guarantees. This is donated care. This is, we are doing the best we can in our community, giving the resources that we have. So people are getting access to these types of services, but we're doing it, and for the most part, in the pilot population, we have done it successfully for everyone that's been enrolled, but we know we have not yet quantified the exact capacity that we have to be able to provide this to all the uninsured in the county. And so these are the variety of services that may be included. Primary preventive care is the key. Dental access has been probably the highest need in our community and continues to be the highest need in our community. And also, if the doctors, in order to participate in this program, they wanted to know that if there was a person sitting in their office and they needed a lab, that they didn't have to jump through hoop after hoop after hoop to get that person in the lab, that this program included support for the ancillary services that the providers who were donating their care needed to be able to do their job. Services not included but possibly negotiated. Now, there are times where a patient enrolled in the program just has to go to the emergency department or really has to truly go to urgent care. We allow for those type of exemptions, but what we want to do is prevent the abuse of those type of things. Now, we have, for example, a client, let's call her Betty, who needs her gallbladder removed, has gone to the emergency department once a week for 8 months. Well, she needed her gallbladder removed, and she couldn't afford to pay for it, and, you know, it wasn't quite critical enough. You know, and since Betty's been in the program, she's gotten her gallbladder removed, and 6 weeks after being in our program, she's out looking for a job. You know, she was totally handicapped and going to the emergency department all the time because of, you know, her condition, and now, you know, she's able to move on, and hopefully she won't need to be on the program anymore once her 6 months initial eligibility expires. Are asked to participating providers care for patients the way you would normally care for patients. We don't want to mess up your workflow. We don't want to ask you to sign a bunch of extra forms. That's not what we're doing here. We're asking you to, a patient walks in the office, they have a card, and many of them for the first time they have a card, and they have to explain to them how they use that card. But once they understand how they use that card, they walk in, they're proud, they show their card, they get care, providers submit a claim to our local Medicaid plan, just like they would any other type of insurance company. We quantify the services and the value of the services delivered, and we give them a MAP coordinator. So when the medical assistant walks out of the office and says, oh my goodness, Dr. Smith, this person needs you know, housing, this person needs drug treatment, that whatever else they need, they make one call to the care coordinator, and that care coordinator will manage everything else. So that doctor just has to manage the medical care process. And that's the same for a mental health provider that may be looking for housing or anything else. Why should providers participate? We talked about that a little bit. It's incredibly inefficient for them in their offices to care for people that are uninsured, and they want to be able to have the tools and the resources to be able to do it efficiently. And we provide some of that. The web-based tracking and care coordination is available at all the enrollment sites and the provider's offices. There's privileged access so that only certain people can view certain screens at certain times, and it's all HIPAA compliant. And people are able to go in and they're able to see, even that if the person no longer has a medical access program card and they've gotten an OHP card, a Medicaid plan, it'll show up on our database that that person no longer has that coverage. And so we're really tracking really an underserved the less than 200% of federal poverty level population, you know, regardless of what type of insurance product they have. This is an example of a activity log. So some of the fields are auto-generated. Some of the fields we actually enter on the back end on the care coordinator side. They're also populated from claims. So if a person goes to the emergency department is in a true emergency and then goes to the primary care office for a follow-up, the primary care provider will log on to this system and see for the first time ever that that patient was in the emergency room. And this is information that they did not have before. In terms of where we are now, as of October 2008, I am now told that we actually have 60 clients. Time flies. I did this last week. I don't know. It's all old. So about 60 clients. They are all less than 185% of federal poverty level. And the source population and the screening sites that we chose were very deliberate. We chose them based on our, it's evidence-driven. So our emergency department utilization data said that two zip codes had the highest utilization among the uninsured. So we started in those two zip codes, and we started in other social service agency federal poverty programs like Head Start, and we started with the Department of Human Services. As people walked out the door being denied from Oregon Health Plan, our Medicaid product, we said, you need care, and it was obvious that they needed care, and some of them needed care that day. And they signed up for MAP and had their services covered kind of on the spot. This program will be expanded to 5,000 clients over a three-year period. Right now, we have 475 providers participating. That is almost half of our entire population, provider population in the county. It's half of our population, but it is every medical group. So not every medical group assigns all of their providers to this program. We've given them total flexibility. Not only have we given them flexibility in how, which providers they assign, we give them flexibility in how they want it done. So it is literally custom tailored to every practice. So for example, practice A wants the patient to call and make an appointment just like they were anybody else. And practice B wants the patient to call a central scheduler at their department, and they will assign the provider to that patient as long as it meshes well with the patient and we allow some flexibility for that. What was really interesting with this is that a lot of the patients, actually, even though they were uninsured, had someone that they did identify as a medical provider in their medical home. And so we would call them and say, you know, you used to have this client. As long as that client hadn't been fired for, reasons that people get fired from medical homes, then they were able to possibly go back to that office. And one of the pledges that we made to the provider groups is that we would equitably assign patients, not equally, equitably assigned patients, so that we have one provider group that comprises, 60% of all the physicians in the community. They're going to get 60% of the MAP clients. So the small independent offices are not going to be overburdened by, this program as a result. As of October 2008, too few claims had been received. That's my take home. So there is some, operationalizing still to be done with the program, but we are able to capture this information over time, and I don't have time to read through it, but as you can see, we're still able to say that, not knowing really the full scope of the utilization because we haven't gotten all the claims back yet, we're already seeing about 72,000 worth of services being delivered, and we can quantify some return on investment on that too. In terms of the lessons learned, Oregon's income verification requirements for federal poverty programs are complex. how many people can echo that in their states, we thought, well, just give us the list. Tell us who's eligible and who's not eligible, and it will be fine. And it was amazing. So we have learned a lot in the process that, you know, not one poverty program is like another poverty program. So there's a lot of time required to enroll patients, 45 minutes to an hour and a half, depending on their level of literacy and their comfort level with the system. There's also the level of acuity of these patients is severe, and it's not surprising given that we captured a lot of people coming right out of DHS being denied for health care. You don't go to DHS unless you really need something, so it's not a big surprise that these people were high level of acuity. Also, in terms of provider relations, it takes a lot. You have to, they need it to be upfront, they need to know that the program is going on, and they need to be somehow rewarded for their efforts over time. So, and they need to see the value of the care coordination that we're doing, which they have. And in terms of operations, it's important to really customize for each participating facility, like we talked about. A lot of manpower is required, because just because your CEO says that you're on board with the program doesn't mean the person downstairs in billing knows anything about it. And we've learned a lot through that process. And also, we're operating under this decentralized model, and that just has its own challenges that I'm sure you can think about too. In terms of our recommendations, probably best to focus on a clearly defined segment of the population. We did that. We chose two zip codes very purposefully, enrolled patients with certain conditions even from those two zip codes. We also enrolled people which we knew nothing about. We need to make an adaptable program, and you need to be really realistic about the amount of personnel required to manage a program like this. There still has to be a manager somehow, even though it's this under this community collaborative model. And you have to have community buy-in from your physicians group and maintain an ongoing dialogue with their staff. I think I went like a minute and a half over.
You did fine.
Okay. Thanks.